I'm Laura Seipert, and this is episode 23, Anxiety My Superpower, with vocal coach Melissa V. Cartwright.
If you are a voice teacher or a choir teacher who sometimes sees your students struggling with mindset or mental health, and you want to know how you can better help them, then this podcast is for you. I'm Laura Seipert. I'm a voice teacher and a board-certified music therapist. Welcome to the Mindful Voice Teacher Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you here and introduce you to my guest of the day. Melissa Cartwright is an amazing vocal coach who is also bilingual and teaches many of her students in Spanish. She is the host of the podcast Cafecito with the Coach, as well as a recording artist and performer. And she has been teaching for many, many years and loves what she does. I'm so excited for you to hear her story and to learn from her. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Melissa. I have Melissa V. Cartwright on the podcast today. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Oh, I am thrilled, woman, thrilled to be talking to you today and really just honored because, what we're going to talk about today I know means a lot to you and it means a lot to me and the way that we serve our amazing singers that we get to work with.
I'm really excited to hear your story, and I'm so grateful to you for coming on and being willing to open up and be vulnerable. I have no doubt that what we're going to talk about is it's going to be so relatable to a lot of the people that are listening to this. But first, I just want to share with the listener that I've known you for a while now. This is not our first time talking. And I think last year I had you on Instagram Live where we talked about mental health. And I've been following you now for about 2 years. And I've just been so impressed with the love that you always carry in all of your content. You have so much energy. You're just a rock star teacher out there in Virginia doing your thing. You now have a podcast of your own, which is absolutely amazing. You have to go and listen. It's called Cafecita with Melissa, right?
Or very, very close. Cafecito with the Coach.
Yeah. Cafecito with the Coach.
Yeah.
I don't know why I got that wrong.
Muy bien. No, you did great.
Thank you. So, Melissa, I just want to hear about your story. Like, how did you become a vocal coach? How did this all happen?
Yes. I wasn't one of those that set out to be a vocal coach, even though my degree was in vocal pedagogy and music ministry. The dream at the time was to be a recording artist. And since I didn't have that business component in my degree, I jumped into internships at radio stations, at music television stations, to kind of get my hands in that world. And so the dream started shifting. That's also where I started becoming a musical theater performer. I started at community theater, then got regional shows booked. And there were so many things in my life that were evolving for the better, you know? So it was a wonderful path, performance path, I should say. So my journey into voice teaching actually came out of necessity. I decided to, after having my first kid, leave my music television network job, become a stay-at-home mama. And it was kind of, I started getting inquiries from people I knew, primarily like in the church world, because my husband at the time was a music minister. I was like, sure. It was just, isn't that so... the story for so many of the things we try. Sure, why not? Cool. It just seemed like an easy thing to do. Then I got more inquiries, right? And it was like, oh, okay. We had a little bit of a life change. We moved from Atlanta, Georgia to here, East Coast, Virginia, where we live. Took a little break to have another kid and do some other things. And then I started getting the inquiries again. When I did it in Georgia, honestly, it felt like a hustle. It was just helping to pay the bills. And I had some amazing singers who were, I look back and I'm so grateful for them. They were so patient with me. And I still follow what they're doing, and they're doing some amazing things. But here in Virginia, when I guess when I restarted my voice coaching journey, it was much more organic. There was a fresh energy. It almost felt like the right place and the right time for it. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I surrendered. And I found a renewed sense of joy, because for me, in my teaching process, and I know you experienced this as well, is being able to see the transformation process. Because before deciding to study music, I actually wanted to go into medicine, and I wanted to be a physical therapist. But a lot of people were like, yeah, that's cool. Not that you wouldn't be a good physical therapist, but there's this side of you that's musical. You can't stop singing. You know, there's something there. So that's how I went down that road. So for me, it's such a sweet, I don't know if you would call it a full circle moment, but in the voice teaching community, we get to experience that, right? Whether it's in the vein of vocal rehabilitation with vocal injury, or, you know, walking someone through the performance anxiety journey and showing them, yes, you can share your voice with the world. You're worthy of sharing your voice with the world. And this is how we're going to help you embrace who you are as an artist and show up the way that you want. So that's why I say the transformation process, because I may not be helping somebody walk again as a physical therapist would, but we get to help people sing again, you know, and they may have had an experience where they felt silenced for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And being able to do voice and performance coaching, that's what I have the honor and the privilege of being able to witness. And it's taught me a lot of things too about myself, which I'm sure we'll delve into here in a minute.
I just think it's so interesting hearing these stories of singers that never really thought they'd become vocal coaches, voice teachers, but just kind of followed the flow of what was happening in their life and what was needed. And then it has led you what it feels like to your true calling of being this rock star teacher, and you, the influence you are having on so many people's lives. I mean, and you're still performing and you're doing your thing and you're still an artist. And I think that actually probably helps you be a better teacher, because you're also doing it for yourself as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A friend of mine says, Mel, you still have skin in the game, you know, like that's what makes you, you know, relatable or whatever. And again, I had plenty of dry seasons as an artist, you know, and you may be in one too, if you're listening to this. So just know that I always subscribe to everything happens for a reason? Yeah, sometimes, you know, but I say just trust the season you're in. It'll definitely lead you to the next. And so I 100% agree with you. That provides a level of relatability to the artists that I get to work with, for sure.
And Melissa, one thing that you've been really open about, and you've shared in some of your content, you've shared with me before, is the fact that you have experienced anxiety throughout your life. I would love to hear your experience with anxiety, what that was like, and maybe how you've learned to move through it as a musician.
Absolutely. So all my life, you know, I've been categorized as the energetic one, the cheerleader, the encourager. There's this phrase that we use in Puerto Rico, esa muchacha está eléctrica, that little girl is so electric, you know, that's the way I was described as a kid. I also, being the oldest and the only female in my family, I was almost like a second mama bear, the protector, the fixer, the mediator between my parents and my younger brothers, you know? And so I took on a lot of these personas. And the biggest one I would say was an identifier for me was the happy girl. Happy, 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 happy. No room for sadness. Nothing's wrong. We're gonna get through this, blah, 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 blah. And the fixer, you know, there's so much of that that became, like I said, a persona, a mask. But Happy Girl had to have a reckoning. And it all happened around the time of the pandemic. There were a lot of things brewing in my life that needed to be addressed personally and professionally, until I finally approached my husband and I said, I need help. So I started seeing a therapist, and through that good work, realized, hey, so I think I want to get clinically diagnosed or clinically evaluated, because my youngest actually is clinically diagnosed with ADHD. And she and I, everybody's always said she and I are two peas in a pod. And when I did the research on some of the way that that presents itself in an adult, if it's undiagnosed, I was like, huh, okay. So I said, I would like to get clinically evaluated for ADHD. And what came back was generalized anxiety disorder, which they're very much related, right? When I received that, Laura, I had a mixture of relief and sadness. And here's why. Relief, because I finally could call it something, and it wasn't, I had so many aha moments, like my life kind of flashing before my eyes, a little bit of, oh, that's why, and that's why, and that's why. A little sadness and a little bit of humility mixed in there, because I had this preconceived notion of what anxiety is supposed to look like based on my interactions with either other family members who've been diagnosed or just people I've known. And I thought, I don't act like them. In fact, sometimes they get on my nerves. You know, like, I'm like, okay. But then again, it's just continued education through the work of therapy, learning that it presents itself in many forms. For me, it was restlessness. And I'm not just talking about lots of worry, because the restlessness could be, could come as being a worry wart. It could also come with not being able to shut my brain off. An influx of ideas and thoughts just rushing in. So I learned through the work of therapy that, you know where I feel it first? In my body. In my body. So in my musicianship, I haven't really dealt with stage fright unless it was like a very, very new or high stakes performance event where I would feel, you know, I'd get sweaty, palms shaking, you know, not being able to calm myself down. Before a performance, you would find me doing push-ups, dancing, jigging, you know, because I feel that adrenaline surge in my body. So I've learned now I need to give myself room to do that. I cannot, let's say, set up for a gig and rush into a performance, because then I have not had room for me to be able to move through that and allow that somatic experience to happen, for me to get to a point where I'm able to focus, because then that leads to me lack of concentration, like trying to piece one thing to the next. I mean, ask my family when I've been in that mode, you know, the oven is still on, you know, the laundry, the door to the dryer still open, you know, because I couldn't complete a task, you know, I'm in overload. So again, so incredibly thankful for the journey of therapy. I did a lot of inner child work through therapy that helped to uncover this, to help unravel the knot of this happy girl. And I think my therapist and I finally called it, when I finally got to a point of resolution, like I felt like I had, you know, been able to work through it successfully, to, you know, happy woman. Like I was no longer having to appease the child in me, you know, or what I felt like I didn't get. Now, happy woman, you know, there's a consistency. I still show up authentically as myself, but I don't have to always do it with a smile on my face. You know, I can be honest about what I'm feeling. I can exercise healthy boundaries for myself, you know, to protect that energy reserve. So yeah, I've got to make sure I give myself plenty of time in whatever creative lane I'm in to decompress as well as ramp up, right? Because otherwise what happens for me is I experience big crashes in energy, in mood, you know, a lot of anxious bunnies like me, you know, we have these really super high, sometimes unattainable expectations for ourselves, especially as artists, right? We struggle with perfectionism. and something could have been stellar, absolutely stellar, and we will have received all of this external validation from the powers that be or from loved ones. But if it did not meet whatever plan I had in my brain, I can experience some pretty gnarly lows. And I have to be able to take care of myself in those moments as well.
Yeah. Would you say that since getting the diagnosis, you have been able to have more compassion with yourself when in a place where you would normally go into one of those gnarly lows that you were talking about?
Absolutely. Compassion is key. Compassion is key. Gosh, there are so many other areas of my life where I've seen that worked, not just in my art, you know, but, you know, for me, my health and wellness, you know, a lot of my, you know, happy girl, gotta be perfect, you know, would present itself with that, right? With my relationship with eating and with movement. And so, oh man, it just feels so good to take some, you know, breaths of fresh air. Doesn't mean I don't struggle. It just means that now I can recognize it when it's there. Mm-hmm. And I have systems in place, and I have a close tribe of people in my brave space that can also help me be those eyes and ears to see, hey, Mel, just checking in. I see that, you know, my husband and my daughters have been able to recognize that as well, as we help all of each other out with this too. Of, hey, mom, you know, or hey, babe. Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's wonderful to have built that network to help you, you know, to hold me accountable to making sure that I'm having compassion for myself as well.
Yeah. I am so grateful for you sharing your story. And so many thoughts have come to my mind. One being the fact that after saying, like, I think I need help, I think I might have ADHD, because what I'm experiencing looks like ADHD. And then you come to find out that you are diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. One thing that I have learned is, like, one person with a mental illness is one person with a mental illness. It's different for every single person. Absolutely. So there's no, like, one box fits all. Everybody has all these symptoms that is diagnosed with anxiety, and everybody with ADHD has all the symptoms. And so you just never know what somebody is experiencing. Also, the fact that you are the happy girl, the happy woman, you always have a smile on your face. People go to you to feel energized and inspired and uplifted. Even you, who have this persona about you, have experienced a lot of mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. And that is another thing we have to be mindful of, our students and the people in our lives that seem like the happy people, that seem like they have everything going on, life is great. It's not always the case.
Not at all.
We need to be mindful and compassionate of the people in our lives, even those people that seem like they got it all figured out.
That's right. And that's when I finally started being honest about my journey. It was really jarring for people because of that preconceived notion they had of me. Even family members who still grapple with that, right? You know, really? And I think I found comfort in the people that were like, yeah, I see you, you know, I'm here for you. They didn't try to fix it for me. And I've always been used to fixing it for other people, right? So it's interesting too that the other facet of the authenticity piece of feeling like you can just show up at like yourself, you know, is also what you will not have a tolerance for anymore. So it's interesting. The things I've worked through, this whole fix it component, like, I can't hear you. La 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 la. Everything's awesome. You know, now I have my spidey senses really tingle when somebody tries to do that to me, or I see it being done to somebody else. Mm. And I have like a zero tolerance level. I mean, I say zero tolerance. It's more like, no, we are not going to do that here. But also, I also understand where that's coming from, you know? So it's the compassion gets worked there, but at the same time, I've set up a new fence, a new healthy boundary where I'm not going to function that way anymore, nor am I going to go there with you. In fact, I'm here for whatever it is you need to say and do, you know, without that surge to let me patch this up for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody's having their own experience.
Yeah.
Yes. And their own journey. And we're just here to be supportive.
Absolutely. And that's something you beautifully reminded me of this inside of your course for, you know, mental health for the voice teacher and how to address this with your students. And, you know, that is something for me translating into the way that I teach now. Mm. That's where the compassion also gets exercised, because I wanted so badly to fix it for my singers, or I didn't know what to do, you know, if they were in my studio space having a panic attack. You know, and I had to learn over time. And now I see, again, it's just so beautiful the way life works and the way things just change. And you start finding your ideal people to work with. Because, you know, I could go back and look in the months leading up to this. Maybe I'll even say a couple of years leading up to this moment where I needed to work on myself. I started, I'll say, attracting, or, you know, that kind of student that without me even asking was very vulnerable about their mental health journey with me. Mm. And, you know, they'd have these moments and I'd try my best to work with them, you know, but then I started just thinking, I feel like I'm outside of my expertise here, you know, because this is a conversation that's coming up a lot with, you know, voice teachers, which is why you are such a valuable resource in our community with, you know, identifying who's who, you know, why people say that a voice lesson feels like therapy. Well, because it requires a certain level of vulnerability, you know, you know, we're not playing an instrument that's made of wood that's shoved into us like a guitar or a violin. It's an extension of us. This is why it feels so vulnerable to work on the voice. And so because I've learned these strategies and tools for myself, both professionally as a coach, as a teacher, and personally, I feel like the studio is now a brave space to hold space for this, to exercise the boundaries of, okay, we do need to acknowledge that your experiences, what you bring to the table, certainly influence the sound of your voice and the music you want to make, okay? But at the same time, they don't run the show. We're not going to let them run the show. They can influence, we can acknowledge they're there, but you're the one that's in charge, right? And then being able to integrate that in our work together.
Mm. Well, thank you for the glowing review on my course. And
It's true.
You know, I have noticed that with myself and with other teachers that I've talked to and worked with, that really comes down to holding space for your students. Like we've said, allowing them to experience what they need to experience, because so often in our world, we feel like we have to put on a certain face or act a certain way in order to be accepted, in order to be even okay to be around. Mm-hmm. And I think as a voice teacher, the gift that often we can give our students is allowing them to just be however they need to be. I mean, if you think about the music experience, it's so full of emotion. And it's always the most emotional experiences, both what we would call negative and positive emotions, that really move us through music. And so I think if we allow our students to experience their emotions and to be okay with expressing anxiousness or fear or even crying in our lessons, then that will allow them to tap into their inner artist as well. And that's, I think, a gift we can give them, is just that safe space to feel and to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't think, you know, I think about even my own experiences, and you know, I received classical voice training in college, even though I'm a contemporary voice teacher. But, and even though I don't necessarily subscribe to some, you know, to everything I was taught. Thankfully, I don't have experiences that I can look back on as super traumatic or anything like that, right? But there are so many singers who do. And I am so grateful that it does not matter the musical genre. Both teachers in the classical and contemporary realms are recognizing that there is a better way. And we're making room to have these conversations, to let our singers show up the way they need to, and debunk whatever image they have in their head of the archetype of the teacher with the glasses, you know, at the end of the nose, and like, oh my gosh, you're doing it wrong, and this and that. And it takes time, doesn't it, to really unravel those limiting beliefs and giving them as much time and space as they need to do that.
Yes. So this kind of ties into what we've just been talking about, but if there's a teacher out there that has not experienced what their student is experiencing, whether that be anxiety or trauma or depression, the teacher cannot necessarily relate because they might not have experienced it at the same level that the student is. What would you say to that teacher if they came to you and said, how can I help and be there for my student without actually really understanding what they're going through?
Gosh, I'm sure that you're feeling that surge to fix it, even though you don't know what the heck to do. All you know is that you probably feel tempted to put a stop to it because in your mind's eye, you're like, I've got to redirect. Yes, you do. You do. But don't be afraid of how much time that might need to take inside of your lesson. Uh-huh. Because here's what I'm sure you've experienced this, and what I'm about to say draws from years of testimonies and kind of like just what the student has shared with me. They will come back to you and say that was probably one of the most powerful lessons that they ever had with you. And maybe they didn't sing a single note, which just seems so ironic, but it's because you just paused. And don't be afraid of awkward silence. Don't be afraid of awkward silence, okay? You can just say, I'm here, you know, and that might just open the door to allow them to experience whatever they need in the moment. Something, a redirect, and I know you've talked about this in your course and something that I do as well, is I allow them to sing something that matches the emotion, but I'll frame it like this. What I'm hearing is that you're pretty pissed off, yeah? And with tears in their eyes, they're nodding their head. Do you want to sing something angry? Like, do you need a vent with a song? And Laura, I've never had anyone reject that offer. Mm-hmm. I was like, so right now you're not performing for me. We are just venting through the music, yeah? And then they're just looking up a karaoke track on YouTube. And it becomes a cathartic experience for this, which we know as music teachers how powerful that can be. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, you know, take a breath. Give them silence if they need it. And if you feel like this is still happening pretty early on in your lesson time and you still need to do something with them, allow them just to sing whatever they need to sing.
Yes. Use the music to be a safe container.
Absolutely.
The music has so much in it that can be there to help your students, especially when you don't know what to say. And so use music. I love that you just allow them to like look up a karaoke track, be like, okay. Also, don't spend so much time picking the perfect song, like, oh, we're going to look up an angry song, or just you can express any emotion really in any song.
That's right. That's a great reminder, right? So we can sing a love ballad and sing it like we're about to break up with that person, you know? Yeah, so much. I say fun, but fun in the sense of, exploration, discovery. You know, you might have, that student may have just uncovered a cool arrangement of something that they're going to try, you know? So you just never know what it can open, whether it's that, a musical moment, or if it was just a human moment for them, right? Yeah.
And not making it seem like it has to turn into anything, even if it could, but yeah. Just letting it be in the moment, like what you said, a human moment.
Just let it be, let it be.
Yep.
Yes. So as we're wrapping up here, I would love to hear some takeaways that you have for the listeners that maybe they can start using today with their students or even with themselves to be more present and to be more aware of themselves and their students.
Absolutely. I'm a big Brené Brown fan. Her work has also been transformative for me. Author and clinical research psychologist, go check her out. She talks a lot about asking ourselves this question, what is the story I'm telling myself? So if for my fellow anxious artists, more often than not, we have these big stories in our brains of whatever is happening that may not be true, that may not be true. So again, just pausing for a second and asking yourself that question can shed some new light and help you filter through what indeed is true and what is your anxiety telling you is true, okay? In a voice space, in a singing space, a lot of times when my singer is experiencing, let's say, the voice cracks or something, you know, in the middle of a warm-up or an exercise or a song, and usually it happens right as we're climbing in range, very normal. They stop themselves or they interrupt themselves in the middle of whatever it is they're singing, and they don't give themselves the benefit of finishing the phrase, finishing the exercise. I phrase it this way. Okay, cool. Voice cracked. All noises and sounds are welcome. So, hey, voice crack. Was that something anatomically stopping you, like you hit a physical wall? Or was it your brain telling you, oh crap, that sounds really high? And they immediately can tell the difference. Oh, wait. Yeah, my brain was just telling me that we're getting higher and I started feeling nervous about getting higher in the range, right? So pause for a second and assess what is physically happening. Something in your larynx is happening, or is it your brain at work? And so now that my singers know how to differentiate that, they can decipher. And when I stop and I kind of just give them a little coy smile, they know what I'm going to ask. They're like, oh, it was my brain. It's my brain. We can keep going. You know? And so, inside the singing space, a lot of times that's why for my studio, MVC stands for mind, voice, confidence, because we're recognizing that the mental component of our preparation is just as important as the vocal. And having access to both is what I believe builds a confident singer. Mm-hmm. So then it's the confidence of knowing, oh, wait, yeah, I know exactly what that is. Here's how we can redirect. So take a minute to ask yourself, really, what's true, what's not true, and assess what is actually going on inside your body.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, those are amazing. I love the question that you asked, like, is that something anatomically or is that something in my mind? I mean, it's something that I've asked myself inside of my mind when I'm teaching voice, but I love the concept of just, like, saying it outright to your student, what was going on there, and
Absolutely. Yes. Like, did you actually feel pressure? You know, point to your body. Where are you feeling something off? You know, and letting that, really turning it inward. I believe that builds body intuitiveness as well, which is probably one of the biggest gifts that my anxiety superpower, I'll call it a superpower, that my anxiety superpower has given me, because I know it presents itself in my body first. Therefore, whatever they're feeling, whether it's, you know, a mental health condition or just straight up nerves, they can learn the signals. They can recognize it for themselves. And that's what we want for as teachers, right? So, you know, that they recognize this when we are not in the concert room, we're not at the gig, we're not at the show. They can do this for themselves.
Yes. Love it. Well, Melissa, this has been fabulous.
Oh,
I'm wondering if you can tell us about anything you're working on that the listeners might be interested in being a part of.
Yes. Well, I am about to launch. I don't know when this podcast will be available, but MVC Performance will be offering its first ever singing course completely in Spanish, completamente en español, which is something. I mean, people know that I'm a bilingual coach. I think it's important for you to know that there are resources out there. So if you're a singer or know someone who feels more comfortable learning in Spanish, that will soon be available. It's called Comienza a Cantar, Start Singing. It's a mini course for someone who may not be exactly ready for a voice lesson, but they still want to learn how to sing the songs that they love to sing. So you'll understand why you're doing this crazy warm-up and how to apply it directly to a song that you already know. And you can learn more about that or get on my mailing list, and that can be found at mbcperformance.com.
That sounds amazing. I wish that I was more fluent in Spanish so I could take the course. Sounds amazing.
Oh,
and also, make sure that you go and listen to Melissa's podcast, Cafecito with the Coach. She has this amazing podcast, and it's so relatable and so warm and so loving. So you will not be disappointed listening to it. If any of the listeners would just like to get in touch with you and chat with you or ask you any questions, how would they do that?
Yes, absolutely. So that was my website, but you can find me on the socials at M as in Melissa, B as in Victor, C Performance, MVC Performance. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. So send me a DM. I'd love to chat with you.
Love it. And I'll put all that information in the show notes for you guys. Melissa, thank you so much for coming on with me today. It was fabulous talking with you. And thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your story as well.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate you.
I'll see you later.
Bye.
Did you enjoy this podcast episode? Then you definitely have to get on my email list if you're not already. On Wednesdays, I send out an email with uplifting messages as well as a fun, positive affirmation vocal warm-up that you can use with your students. I'd love for you to get these, so sign up through the link in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you rated and left a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast. This will help more music educators like you to find the podcast and get the help and resources they need. If you didn't like it, then no worries. It's totally cool.